My guest at this time is Dr. Tim Ball, former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg. He is also the author of numerous books, including The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science and his latest, Human-Caused Global Warming, The Biggest Deception in History. Dr. Ball normally joins us to discuss developments in the climate debate, but today he is the story. On Tuesday, a judge in Canada dismissed all charges against Dr. Ball that were filed against him by former Intergovernmental Climate Change Panel member Andrew Weaver, who is now also the head of the Green Party in British Columbia. It's a victory that Dr. Ball considers a big victory for free speech in a nation where that doesn't always happen. And Dr. Ball, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, and thanks to express to Americans how valuable their free speech is and how unique it is, which, of course, is what they talk about with American exceptionalism.
You are actually facing, ultimately, at one point, three different lawsuits, all related to IPCC folks, which is the UN panel on climate change. One of them, the costs were too prohibitive, and you decided just to remove whatever you had written on that particular incident. But let's talk about the Weaver situation. Why was he going after you? What had you said or written?
Well, I'd written an article, and by the way, the lawsuits weren't just filed against me, and this should be chilling to you as a media person. The lawsuits were filed against me and the people that published what I wrote. And, of course, that sets us against each other. But the Weaver article, basically it was saying that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change had so directed the focus of climate search and all of the funding, by the way, and we're talking billions of American dollars, towards the CO2 and human-caused climate change. And so for 30 years, there's been no real advance in our understanding of climate. And so that was what the article was about. The mistake I made was that after an interview with Weaver, I made some comments that I didn't fully substantiate. And, of course, that's what triggered the lawsuit. As soon as I got the lawsuit, I sent him a letter of apology for those unsubstantiated comments, but that wasn't enough for him to drop the lawsuit. He took it all the way. And to give you a measure of what we're dealing with, he posted that apology letter of mine on a wall in his academic office that is labeled the Wall of Hate. And he's labeled it that because he shows it to students to say, look, here's all the people that hate me, and this is what I have to go through to defend you and defend the planet, from these climate change deniers. And, of course, it's laughable because I don't hate him. What I dislike is the fact that he's using climate science for a political agenda. That's the real theme of it. So that's what it was all about. The judge heard all of that, heard about the Wall of Hate, and came forward with his judgment of total dismissal of Weaver's claims. And by the way, when we finally got to the courtroom, he didn't present a single witness.
Wow. Well, that tells you one of the reasons probably why the judge realized there weren't many merits to the case. Is there any particular quote that the judge had in making this decision, or did he simply just dismiss the charges?
Well, he's just simply dismissed the charges, but I think that the opening comment that he made in the trial is very telling, because literally his opening sentence was, this courtroom will not be used to settle the global warming debate. And, of course, that's the difficulty. The courts are saying, look, we're not qualified as scientists. We don't know who's right or wrong. So they tend to avoid. And you saw this, by the way, with Justice Scalia when the EPA took the case of CO2 as a hazardous substance. And Scalia said, why are we ruling on this? We're not scientists. And that's a dilemma for society today because, you know, when you get corrupted science or misuse of science, it has impact on everybody, and yet the courts are not set up to handle this. And that's very central to this. And that was my concern, was when you get political scientists, then you've got a misuse of science. Science has got to be apolitical, without question.
Dr. Ball, in addition to the debate between you and Weaver about what you said and so forth, there's also the issue of free speech here. And you've made the contention that you are facing these charges because of what's known as SLAP laws. And SLAP is an acronym which stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. So Mr. Weaver didn't like your public participation in the climate debate. And ultimately, what does this say about the ability to freely state what you believe, particularly in Canada right now?
Well, it's also in the U.S., by the way, that there are the use of the law to silence people is becoming endemic. And what's happening is that various jurisdictions are passing what they call anti-SLAPP legislation. And I believe over half of the states have passed this already. In Canada, 8 of the 10 provinces have anti-SLAPP legislation. What's interesting is that in British Columbia, where these court cases were brought, they had anti-SLAPP legislation. They got a new government in power, and they rescinded the anti-SLAPP legislation, which is why they were able to file these trials in British Columbia. And the bigger one, of course, is the third trial that I've got coming up with Michael Mann, whose hockey stick was used as basically, as somebody said, the poster child for the whole global warming issue. And I gave a talk about what he did with the hockey stick in Winnipeg, Manitoba, spoke to a group, what I said was recorded, and within 12 hours, a lawsuit was filed on Michael Mann's behalf. Now, here's an American living in Pennsylvania filing a lawsuit in British Columbia for an event that occurred in Manitoba, Winnipeg, Manitoba. And I mean, this is what they call jurisdictional shopping. And it's a measure for me of the extent to which they're using the law to silence people.
Do you see this, Dr. Ball, as just an encroachment of the move against free speech, or do you think it's more severe now because the climate change folks are more on the defensive since their projections have not materialized?
I think it's a function of both. And, of course, it's much like, as everybody knows and the philosophers talk about, when you start to lose an argument, you start to attack the individual. And, of course, that's what these lawsuits are. They're silencing the individual, but they have a residual effect because, you know, people have said to me, hey, we wouldn't go through what you're going through, so we're going to keep our mouths shut. So there's a knock-on effect of this. So the other thing I've had scientists say to me, well, we agree with you, but we won't say anything because we'll lose our jobs. And even more disturbing for me, in a way, scientists have said, look, we're Democrats or socialists, and even though we agree with you, we're not going to say that because immediately we'll be cast as right-wing conservatives. And, of course, to me, that's a measure of how political this whole issue is. So, it to me, it's a very troubling trend in a supposedly democratic society. And, of course, we all know the myth of that, because why, with free speech and democracy, do you have to pass whistleblower laws to protect people that are pointing out corruption within a system?
Dr. Ball, not to get too personal, but I know you've written about this, and you've certainly mentioned it in some of our conversations as well. You also just mentioned what it's meant for you in terms of watching other people not speak up because they know what can happen. It's cost you legally. It's cost you financially. Has it been worth it to speak out the way you have?
I do a lot of Skype interviews with school groups who I'm the go-to skeptic, and I'm always willing to answer their questions. And a young girl from Colorado asked me exactly that question just last summer, and I tell you, it hit me right between the eyes. And I said, look, it really doesn't matter now. I'm in this, and I'm not going to quit. I'm got to move forward with it. But I said, the truth be known, if I knew what I was going to go through, I probably wouldn't have done it again. But so that's basically the answer I can give. But, of course, as Edmund Burke famously said, that evil triumphs when good people stand idly by.
Certainly the case. What do you see on the forefront for the battle over free speech here? How is it likely to proceed in Canada as well as here in the U.S.?
Well, I think that people are becoming aware because of the attacks on Trump and all of the what's gone on with the law enforcement agencies and so on, that free speech is very much under attack, even in the U.S. And, of course, in countries like all the countries of the rest of the world, which don't have free speech as the number one priority for their existence, it's even more troubling. And there's a reason the Founding Fathers put free speech at the top of the list, and there's a reason they got the Second Amendment to protect the First Amendment. And Americans have to realize just how incredibly valuable that free speech issue is. And for example, it's unlikely that the lawsuits against me would have been filed in any jurisdiction in the United States.
Lastly, your prime minister just a few days ago corrected someone using the word mankind to peoplekind. He later said he was joking. Didn't necessarily seem like it in the moment. Perhaps people aren't aware in the United States exactly about the speed of the progress that this is happening with in Canada. What can you tell them?
Well, I would agree with them. I mean, and just to give you an illustration of the problem, the prime minister, I never got to vote for him. He was elected by the Liberal Party, and he only got 80% of their vote, and the Liberal Party only got 38% of the Canadian vote, yet they became the parliament or the party of power, and he then became the prime minister. So it's likely that he was only elected by maybe 35% of the total population, but I had no say in that. And, of course, that's why you had your American Revolution.
Dr. Ball, the battle goes on, and we thank you so much for sharing your story with us as well as your expertise on a regular basis. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today.
Well, thank you for allowing me to say both sides of the story and allowing people to make up their own minds, because that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. Dr. Tim Ball, former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg, author of numerous books, including The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science and his most recent work, Human-Caused Global Warming, The Biggest Deception in History. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.